Hello, I'm Anna.
And I'm Bethany, and we're trying to review every Jane Austen adaptation ever.
Welcome to Austen Translation, the only Jane Austen podcast that covers the character's star signs.
That we know of. We're two best friends who've known each other since school. I've persuaded Anna to join me on this Jane Austen journey.
I'm less of an Austen expert, but I'm no less ready to share my hot takes on these adaptations.
This week we watched the Pride and Prejudice 1940. I don't know why I wrote 1939.
I wrote 1944, but to be honest, it was just anyone's guess because I couldn't be bothered to Google it.
I was like around the beginning of the war.
It was one of those ones.
Yeah. So it's the one with Laurence Olivier and I can't even remember the other woman.
God, we're not doing well, are we, already?
Greer Garson. Is she famous? I feel like she is.
Probably. We're playing fast and loose in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it was absolute shite, weren't it?
So. It didn't deserve any more attention than we already gave it.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was so much.
Yeah. Wow. And it all just happened as if it wasn't, I don't know, it was just, you watch something and it's called Pride and Prejudice, it says it's based off the book by Jane Austen, and then you watch it and it's just like, no, what have you done?
They played fast and loose with the plot.
They did not give a shit.
Everything was the Victorian era instead.
To be fair, I would say it was like less Regency era and more like slightly after that, which is like when they started getting big poofy dresses and stuff. So that's more like, not Edwardian. The era is slightly after Regency era, so it's like the end of Empire line dresses, but they start getting really poofy sleeves. And very poofy skirts. And it reminds me, it reminds me of, did you see Gentleman Jack?
Yes, I did.
You know what? How they dress in Gentleman Jack?
Anyway, it was wrong. It was wrong for what it was supposed to be.
It was not right. It was wrong. But I mean, yeah. To be fair, did Jane Austen specify when she was writing Pride and Prejudice? Because she could have been writing it in the future. She could have just been like, you know, it could have been like...
That's such a reach.
I'm just saying, like, it's not specified, so it could have been some kind of futuristic, except it was really specific and very short term. Like, it's like if I wrote a book now and I wrote it in like 2026, and I was just like, everyone's dresses are slightly different.
So slightly in the future.
Yeah, just to be, just seems like the sort of thing Jane would do. Just to be...
I did look up, so there's some key things that we'll get onto a bit later, but I did look it up and it had been around for a while, so I was like, I can't even have a go at them about this, even though it's clearly associated with different eras. But anyway, we should get on. So when it opened...
It happened in Old England. Very beginning of the credits, it said, it happened in Ye Old England. I don't know if it said Ye Old, but it definitely said Old England in...
I wouldn't have put it past it.
In caps lock. Like, I don't know why Old England was all in capitals, nothing else was. And then they do the credit. Well, you know how in old films they have the credits at the beginning, and it's really boring. And it lists the cast based on where the characters live in the story. So it's not like...
I quite liked it. I quite liked it because I kind of forget place names.
Well, I guess it sort of helps to set the scene, but yeah. Like, really, you shouldn't be leaving that to just listing them at the credits. That should be quite clear.
I think they thought they were doing something new and fancy, maybe.
Okay. Well.
But I mean, the plot goes out the window, I think, from the beginning.
From the very beginning. Jane Austen is rolling in her grave.
Literally. We open and they're in a fabric shop with Mrs. Bennet, Lizzie and Jane.
Yeah, somehow. Like, they never go to a shop in this. And in fact, I remember Kitty and Lydia always talking about how they're really into shopping. But I don't think we ever see the Bennets in a fabric shop. I mean, I guess that's not compared to some of the other sort of avenues that they take in the story that are completely unrelated to the novel. I'll let that one slide for now.
What's that bad review of Pride and Prejudice where it's like they just go
people,
to other people's
houses? Yeah, just people going to other people's houses.
And I was like, that is the essence of all Jane Austen, and they've thrown it out the window in the first scene. They're in this fabric shop and they see a carriage and they're like, ooh, who's in the carriage?
Oh, Mrs. Bennett says, whoops-a-daisy, what a commotion. Which is, she says whoops-a-daisy like several times in this scene and then never again.
Also, I have a bone to pick about Mrs. Bennett, and I, so far until this film, I hadn't come across a bad Mrs. Bennett.
It's not hard to do her. You just have to be really like chaotic and like frazzled.
Yeah. See, she was weird, but she wasn't neurotic or chaotic.
No.
She was just a bit. She was a bit more of a busybody rather than a Mrs. Bennet, who is a busybody, but that's only a small part.
Yeah, I mean, because she talks about her nerves quite a lot, but like not in a way where she actually sounds like she's really nervous. She just is sort of like, oh, my nerves. Whereas like usually Mrs. Bennet's like, oh, my nerves.
Literally, that's all we needed.
I should have blamed Mrs. Bennet. I should have gone back in time. I could have saved that movie. That's all I'm saying. Jane Austen wrote this in the future, and, you know, what's to stop me?
Also, Aunt Phillips gets a bigger role in this.
Yeah, Aunt Phillips turns up. Oh, she barely, like, we never really hear from Aunt Phillips.
I'm not even sure if she's the aunt that Lizzie goes on holiday with.
No, she's not. She's not, because I just listened to the audiobook. Aunt Phillips is Mrs. Bennet's sister. Oh, the Gardeners are... Mrs. Bennet's brother is Mr. Gardener, and then Mrs. Gardener is the woman he's married to.
Yeah, I think, like, Aunt Phillips is a character, but they've just shoehorned in.
So she's just basically, like, the less respectable one of their aunts.
So she runs in and she's got all the hot goss about the carriage.
Oh, yeah. Yes, and Mr. Darcy and his dogs, which show that he's really rich because he's got dogs.
Oh, yeah, he owns the two carriages and the two dogs.
The two dogs.
The two dogs, which we never get to see. We do get to see dogs later on in the film.
Do we?
Very, I don't think
they're. Oh, yeah, puppies. Oh, yeah, that was another weird thing that they added.
Yeah, that was another scene they've made up.
We'll get to that. Don't you worry.
Lady Lucas comes in and
everyone's in there.
We're still in the fabric shop.
Yeah, everyone's getting introduced and happens to be in the fabric shop at the same time.
Mrs. Bennet, their rivalry. I actually wrote down, the women are competing but united in gossip.
United in gossip.
So Lady Lucas comes in and she's like, oh, have you seen the carriage? And Mrs. Bennet's like, actually, I know all about it because Aunt Phillips has literally just told her about it.
Yeah. And then Mrs. Lucas is trying to get the scoop and obviously she hasn't. And then Charlotte's there and they're like, Mrs. Bennet obviously just classically is like, oh, well, I'm going to get one of my daughters married to those rich men. And we find out about how much money they've got. Bingley's got 5,000 a year, Darcy's got 10,000 a year, and they're both single.
Also, at one point, Lady Lucas absolutely wrecks Charlotte. She says, the exact thing she says is, because I wrote it down because I said I wanted it on my gravestone, is she may not have beauty, but she has character. And I may not have beauty, but I have character on my gravestone.
I beg to differ. You're really boring.
I mean, I don't really care. This isn't me being like self-deprecating, being like, tell me I'm beautiful. I don't actually care about that. Although we've had this conversation multiple times about how when you get exceptionally beautiful people or like very conventionally attractive people, they don't realize that the world isn't as nice for everyone.
Yeah, they're walking through the world. They think that everyone's just experiencing the ease and the politeness that they experience.
Yeah. This is where I got lost a bit, because they somehow leave the shop and they're running around the village and I don't know why.
Well, yeah, so they're in the village. It's like the town square kind of thing. And you cut to seeing, you're introduced to Kitty and Lydia, who are with a bunch of officers. So the officers are already here. There's no like, ooh, officers, because they're there. And it's just like, oh yeah, Kitty and Lydia have already been hanging out and flirting with the officers. Mr. Wickham is there. Lydia's flirting with Mr. Wickham. They're watching a Punch and Judy show. A wild Punch and Judy show appears.
It made me angry.
And also the way The sounds that the Punch and Judy show were making sounded like cats fighting.
I mean, that I don't is know Punch what was... and Judy, I think. It is very much that, like, squawking.
Well, I don't think I've ever seen one, to be
honest. Yeah, it's not nice. I mean, it's not nice. It's actually horrible.
Stressing me out.
I think it's either Punch or Judy. One of them is just getting beaten up by the other.
Yeah, I swear it's like someone beats the other one to death or something.
Yeah, and there's just lots of squawking. And they have, like, these high-pitched... It's just horrible. But, yeah, they're kind of running around the village at this point.
Well, they're, like, with... Rushing. They're trying to race home.
Then they get into the carriage, and then they're trying to race home. And I thought when this first happened... So Lady Lucas and Charlotte is in one carriage, and the Bennets are in another carriage. And they're galloping home. I thought they were racing to Netherfield or something to try and introduce themselves first. But no! They're just racing home to their separate houses.
Yeah, I mean, I think the implication is that, like, as soon as they get home, they're going to find a way to get themselves introduced to Bingley. But to be honest, I don't think that you getting home a few minutes earlier is going to really help.
Yeah, and there's, like, this weird scene where Lady Lucas overtakes the carriage. And then,
it's like, yeah, it's literally like a car chase.
Yeah, it's like a car chase. And then Mrs. Bennet is like, faster, Jennings!
Faster, Jennings, faster. And this is just like a brief taste of the chaos that is to come.
Yeah, just something weird that happens. And then they get home.
Oh yeah, you see Mr. Bennet. Classic Mr. Bennet, yeah. Just an old guy.
He's actually an alright Mr. Bennet.
Reading a newspaper.
One of probably.
Yeah, he's fine.
The most accurate portrayal of a character in this film, I'd probably say.
Yeah, because they don't like add random things to his storyline, but basically, yeah, there's the whole thing where Mrs. Bennet's like, you need to write to Mr. Bingley and get us introduced, and Mr. Bennet's just fucking with her, being like, well, nah, can't be arsed.
And then they start insulting their daughters as well at this point, and Mr. Bennet says perhaps we should have drowned them all at birth.
Yeah, I think they're saying about how they've got so many daughters that they need to marry
off. Yeah, they're like, oh, there's too many, but I think that statistically one of them's gonna be poor. But yeah, he's winding her up, isn't he? He's just egging her on and winding her up, and then he's just like, and then she's like, just stop talking about it, it's upsetting me. And he's like, well, I shouldn't have actually set it up then, should I?
Yeah, he just loves to fuck with her, and that's like, but that's like a very, that's true to the book.
Yeah, I wrote down, he's such a sly dog.
he loves it.
Mr. Bennet's invited Bingley.
Oh, he's given Bingley tickets to the assembly.
Yeah, the assembly ball. And then we immediately cut to the assembly ball, and Wickham is there.
Yeah, Wickham with his little drawn-on moustache, just like a pencil moustache, but it's literally pencil.
Tiny little moustache, Wickham.
Just looks like John Waters' little moustache.
Yeah, that's when I started getting angry about the plot.
I was mad that Wickham, because Wickham was there at the very, very beginning when you get introduced to Kitty and Lydia, and Lydia's already flirting with him, and I'm like, this is not how it happened.
I didn't even see that bit, because that bit was quite chaotic, that bit where they're running around the village or whatever. I was like, I don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, but like Lydia says, like, oh, Mr. Wickham, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, oh, okay, I see. You're here. You're not supposed to be here.
And also, he meets Darcy here as well. So, like, all of the characters have now interacted, basically.
Because at first, Wickham is dancing with Lydia.
Yeah. They've already got a relationship.
Which is weird.
Yeah, they've already got a flirtation going.
Yeah, but then Wickham's like, oh, who's that beautiful woman over there? I think, do you call her a goddess? Anyway, and Lydia's like, oh, hey, Lizzie, we can fix her a goddess. Do you want to dance with her? And she's like, yeah, all right then.
To be fair, say what you like about Lydia, excellent wing woman. I mean, even if it's for a little scoundrel like Wickham.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's like, he calls her a beautiful creature. That's what he calls her.
Oh, that's
her.
Right, not a goddess.
And then when he's going to get rid of Lydia to dance with Lizzie, he's like, I won't even tell you what kind of creature you are. And I was like, oh,
weird.
Horrific. She's a teenager, you dirty pervert. I was being really careful about my words then.
You dirty perv.
I was like, what's appropriate to say on a podcast?
The music is really weird in this as well. It's called a military polka, according to the subtitles, but it was very weird. And then Mr. Darcy and Mr. Bingley show up with Caroline Bingley, who looks, she has a really great entrance because she like walks in, she's got like a big cloak on or something. She takes the cloak off.
Yeah, she's an all right Caroline Bingley as well, I think. I mean, none of them are great actors. I mean, this literally has Laurence Olivier in it, and I'm still like, it was a bit of a shite Darcy, mate.
Yeah, it was not great.
Also, this is at the point we should point out where they literally use a racial slur, and that obviously was horrible and just...
Yeah, I don't know if it's even at this point. I mean, it's a little bit later, but yeah.
No, it's at the dance, isn't it? Because he's like...
Yeah, it is, but I think it, like, so first, Lizzie dances with Wickham, and then... Lizzie overhears Mr. Darcy saying that she's... Well, they changed the line, actually, because Bingley goes over and Lizzie and Charlotte Lucas are just sitting on the side behind a pillar, and then they don't see them, so they're standing in front of the pillar, and Bingley says to Mr. Darcy, like, you should come and dance. You know, there's loads of pretty girls around. And Mr. Darcy says something like, I'm in no humour to give consequence to the middle classes at play.
Yeah.
Which is not what he says in the book.
Yeah, it's weird because basically, like with Pride and Prejudice, the musical, it's a bit too on the nose. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's
not the line, because the line is a classic line, which is that I'm in no mood to give consequence to women who have been slighted by other men.
Yeah. I think they've decided, oh, this is a thing about class, so we're just going to explicitly... Like, it's always kind of just heavily implied. They never explicitly say that the Bennets are a lower class.
Yeah, it's very on the nose. It's being like, yeah, he's being a class snob. And it's like, well, yeah, we know that, though, don't we?
Yeah, like, that's...
But, oh, we also wanted to talk about Jemima. Oh, yeah, Jemima scratching.
Just written, I'm Jemima. So they do this shot where... So Jane is dancing with Bingley. Lizzie's just been asked to dance by Wickham again, I think. So she's just off. And Mrs. Bennet is like sitting there very pleased with herself and kind of being snide to Lady Lucas. And then they just shoot to this other family. And then like there's this girl, Jemima, scratching her neck. And her mum's just like, stop scratching Jemima! And there's like absolute sheer embarrassment because like the Bennets are getting all the men or whatever.
And Kitty's always coughing. At the beginning, Kitty coughs and she gets told off, and then she starts coughing at the assembly, and it's just classic Kitty moment. Just coughing.
Is that when they tell her to put her arms up? Absolute liability.
Yeah, they're like, put your arms up in the air, Kitty, so you can stop coughing. Like, what is going on?
They explicitly show Kitty and Lydia being really drunk.
Yeah.
Like, they're at...
Or they're, I don't know if they're drunk at this point. They get drunk later, but they're just being completely...
Oh, yeah, like, they're kind of... If it was, like, a modern-day equivalent, you would see that these, like, young girls were with these, like, boisterous soldiers kind of doing shots. I feel like if you were going to put a modern-day... you'd be like, oh yeah, they're really embarrassingly drunk with these older men, and it's a bit like, but not the thing is, it's all kind of just like, oh, how embarrassing Lydia is, and I'm just like, well, they're the older men, so, but that's modern ideals on a old story.
So Bingley is immediately really attracted to Jane. He asks her to dance. He says, do you like horse riding? And she's like, yeah, I do. And he's like, oh, I also love horse riding. Isn't that so funny? We both enjoy horse riding in the very limited things that we have the opportunity to do as hobbies, that we both like a thing.
Yeah.
And anyway, and then he's like, I hope we can ride together. And I was like,
So yeah, they have a successful assembly ball.
Apart from Darcy being a racist, I want to talk about this because it's not necessary. It wasn't in the book. They've just, and this is the thing, right? And I'm not saying that Jane Austen would have been all right to say this in the Regency era, but it was like at the peak of the slave trade, right? But they've actually made this in 1940 and they just decided this isn't racist enough.
Yeah.
So Darcy says...
Put in for no reason other than it feels like they want to be racist.
Like, are they trying to prove that Darcy's a snob? Because there's a lot of ways that you could do that without him using a racist
slur. I don't think that's what they were doing with that. I think that was...
Yes.
I mean, I don't think we really need to say it, but he basically... His words are like any, and then he uses a rude word for black people can dance.
Yeah, well, he talks about savages, essentially.
Yeah, and then he uses a slur for black people that was predominantly used during that era for a particular tribe when I looked it up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But we should mention it because honestly, nothing can redeem Darcy now.
Yeah, he's fucked it. He's totally fucked it.
And that's why I was a bit like, this word wasn't even in the book and they've made him say it. Well, I doubt it probably took a lot of
I mean, this is Laurence Olivier. He played Othello in Blackface.
Yeah, so it's not like they made him say it or whatever. But he said it in this film. And I'm just like, well, now, no matter what... I mean, the Darcy is shy anyway. He's a shite Darcy. But no matter what he does, it's never going to... That was it for me.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, you're dead to me now.
I wonder whether that was acceptable in the 40s or not, or how acceptable it was. I mean, I think it's like still segregation time, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And there would have been rampant racism at that point. It was pre-Windrush as well. So, it would have been a massively racist time. And this was during like Empire... glory days as well.
Were the 40s.
Yeah, so obviously the Empire was during the Victorian era and all of that, but this would have been a time when people were still, they were still active.
On that note, I mean, we can talk about costuming a bit more later, but they've got very 40s hair. It's not like they've really tried to do Regency hair in any way. They've given them all these kind of very, like, I mean, I guess, I think Mrs. Bennet's got the kind of, like, spirally curls at the front, which they had like kind of barrel curls, but Lizzie's got a very 1940s looking hairdo.
Yeah, also we haven't really given it much screen time, but both Lizzie and Jane are also played badly.
They're bad, yeah. I mean, Jane, it's hard to play Jane badly because she just doesn't have very much.
Yeah, to be fair, she's just a bit flat in this and that's like fair enough. But Lizzie, it's just not really Lizzie, is it?
No, I mean, she's sassy and like headstrong. She does, yeah, she's got her kind of like sarcastic barbs.
But I wouldn't
and
say
stuff,
she even does them very well. She's still trying to be...
No, she doesn't really have Lizzie Bennet energy.
Yeah, she doesn't have the same energy. She just says something, but she's not saying it with her chest.
She's not embodying.
Honestly, it's like that thing where you're made to do drama at school and you're just saying the lines.
Yeah, a little bit.
So at the end of the ball, they're immediately all back at the house. Together.
Sorry, before we end the ball, Mr. Darcy, and this is also very infuriating, Mr. Darcy goes, because after he said that he doesn't want to dance with Lizzie because she's a middle class person at play or whatever, he then changes his mind and he's like asks, I think, Lord Lucas to introduce him to her. And so he goes over and he's like, do you want to dance? And she's like, no. And he's like, are you serious? You don't want to dance with me? And she's like, no. And then Mr. Wickham comes over and asks her to dance and she immediately accepts him. And yeah. Darcy's like,
she absolutely
is so fucking cold.
Him off, don't she?
Completely wrecked.
I was actually
absolutely
a bit embarrassed for him at that point.
I know. I was like, oh my God. Like, that's not in the book. And also he doesn't ask her to dance at this one. He asks her to dance at the second ball. That they have at is it at Netherfield?
Yeah, I think that's when Bingley puts his ball on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, plot-wise, it's not true, but she does absolutely wreck him with it. Because the thing is, one thing is key about the plot is Wickham and Darcy do not spend much time together physically. That allows the rumour to circulate because
they're never in the same room.
Yeah. I think he sees him briefly in the town when he's on a horse and he just rides off.
Yeah, because Wickham says in the book, he's like, oh, well, no, I'm going to go to the ball. If Mr. Darcy wants to avoid me, then he needs to not come. And then he does. And then it's like it's this kind of evidence of his slightly duplicitous or like the kind of front that he's got on. because he says one thing and then he does another, because he then doesn't turn back to the ball. And, that establishes his character.
Yeah, and I think it's also evidence that it's kind of maybe what he's saying is not the truth, because he doesn't actually want to be there in case Darcy exposes him. So that's part of the plot, is they can't be spending too much time together, because if Darcy hears about these lies, he's going to correct them. So they've got Wickham in it from the beginning, which really annoyed me. And he's at every ball, every event that they're at.
Everyone's there all the time.
And it just seems a bit ridiculous. I didn't really waste a lot of my notes on, so after the ball, that is the bit where Jane gets invited to Netherfield and she gets ill.
Yeah.
But all I've written of that whole section is Darcy is nice to her when Jane is ill.
Right, so I've got, first of all, I said that Lizzie, that the one thing that I did like about Lizzie's costumes, which marked her out as Lizzie, is that they often put her in kind of things that evoked a suit and tie situation. So she had this one thing when Jane's going off to Netherfield, she's wearing what looks like a blazer with a white work shirt and then a tie underneath, but obviously it's made into a kind of Georgian poofy dress with big sleeves and stuff, but and she has this quite a lot throughout, which is kind of it's got that kind of masculine edge to it that I think often Lizzie has. But then so the classic Jane goes off to Netherfield, Mrs. Bennet makes her go, although it says Mrs. Bennet actually makes her go on horseback, but in this she goes in the carriage.
Yeah, so she's not going to get ill then. That's the whole point.
But then she does get ill.
Yeah, that's where they've thrown the plot out the window.
Well, I don't know. Is it an open-top carriage? Maybe that's it. I don't know. But anyway, she gets there and she's really ill. And she's wearing a frilly bonnet. She's in bed. Mr. Bingley, there's a screen next to the bed, and Mr. Bingley keeps poking his head over the screen and saying shit. The doctor's talking in a weird medical language, and he's translating it for her because somehow he knows all of that medical terminology. But yeah, they're just hanging around while she's in her little. At one point, they the doctor lifts up the duvet that she's under, and she screams, and it's by her feet. I don't really know what that was about, but I just noticed that. What else? Yeah, Mr. Darcy is nice to her. He calls her Elizabeth.
Yeah, because then Lizzie turns up to visit her, and this is why he's a bit of a shit Darcy, because there's no awkwardness. He's just outright.
He's very affable to her when she's there, and you think that's not. He's supposed to be cold and sort of ignoring her.
And if you read the book, there's this inner turmoil of he fancies her, but he's very aware that he needs to not fancy her. So he's outrightly rude to kind of, it's almost like he's in this battle with himself where he's just if I'm rude to her, that'll put an end to it.
Yeah, and he already, where Caroline Bingley's talking shit about her, and he's kind of defending her, and he's is it wrong for a girl to come and visit her sister or something? Because Caroline Bingley's it's totally unnecessary for you to be here.
She's absolutely savage, Caroline Bingley, at various points throughout this.
Yeah. And then the turn around the room happens. Caroline Bingley is do you want to have a turn around the room? But it's not a turn, because they don't turn at all. They just walk up and down in the straight line for a bit. And it's literally it's a matter of a couple of metres they're walking. It's almost it's a few feet. It's a few steps. And then they turn around, and I guess that is the turn, but it's not around the room. It's simply in one direction and then back the other way. And obviously there's the classic line where Mr. Darcy says, there's two reasons that you would want to be doing that, either because you have secret business to discuss, or you want to make your figures look most admirable from where they are, or whatever it is he says. But anyway, so there's that. Jane's and then Jane is wearing, I don't know, I think this is probably a different scene, but I've just got in my notes Jane's little crochet cape, because at one point Jane's wearing a really cute little crochet cape. Did
you see that? Because The thing about this as well is the scenes end quite suddenly.
Yeah, it's like one thing to another, and you're just like, it's absolutely, you just, cause, and that's the thing, because they've messed around with the order of things. You're just like, I have no idea.
Yeah, because they're immediately back at the house altogether. You don't see them deciding to leave. It's just over.
Yeah, there's one point later on where Lizzie mentions that she thought Jane was still in London, but we don't know that Jane's gone to London. There was never any mention of her going to London.
Yeah, so they do things like this. So, like, after that scene in the drawing room or wherever they're in, they're then immediately back at the house, and Jane is better. And then Mr. Collins is upstairs.
Yeah, Mr. Collins
arrived. Yeah, so he's arrived while, because Mr. Bingley is trying to get Lizzie to stay, and she's like, oh no, we must go because our cousin is due to arrive. And then they're immediately back at the house, and Mr. Collins is upstairs getting ready for dinner.
Well, no, he's coming. I think he's coming down. Yeah. And then he looks at himself, like, in the mirror. Or
oh, yeah. So, yeah, that does happen, because when they're originally back, though, they have this conversation about how he's upstairs getting ready for dinner. And then Mrs. Bennett is like, can you go get him? Why should I have to wait for my dinner? Because he's still getting ready. And then we get the scene where he's coming down the stairs. And he's practicing.
And he is actually a good Mr. Collins.
I feel like, I would say, you know how there's, what do they call them?
He's not as obsequious and creepy as some of the Mr. Collins. Like, you know, 1995 Mr. Collins. I think they, like, deliberately put grease on his upper lip and made his hair stick to his face to make him extra creepy. And there wasn't that with this guy. It wasn't like, didn't make you physically shiver. Yeah, in the Mr. Collins
I think they called it,
it was more of a comical
character actors, and you know those people that get kind of, I would say, like, the fun characters. I feel like Mrs. Bennett is quite fun to play, and I feel like Mr. Collins is quite fun to play.
Yeah,
you get a lot of scope with it, where I feel like Jane would be so boring to play.
Yeah, but yeah, I feel like there was a lot more scope with both Mrs. Bennett and Mr. Collins, where they could have really hammed it up and they didn't.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite a tame adaptation in general.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it is a, it's comedic in some places, but then it's weird, there's certain points that they don't choose to exploit as comedy.
Yeah.
Where they had that opportunity.
But I should point out, I think it's Lydia who goes, what a pudding face, when they spot him.
Heavens, what a pudding face. And he has little opera glasses as well, that's fun. And he's looking at everyone with his little opera glasses, being like, which one of you shall I marry?
Yeah, because we don't actually see them eat dinner, because I was expecting a boiled potato scene, but we didn't get it.
I know, we didn't get any boiled potatoes.
So they're immediately after dinner, we skip that. And then Mr. Collins is deciding who he's going to marry, and Lizzie is just playing the harp in the background.
Yeah, as you do. Also, I just want to say, Mrs. Bennett's accent in this so ridiculous.
Yeah.
She's like, every time she says Bingley, like, Bingley.
Yeah, and she'll go, Lizzie, Kitty,
Family.
Family. You're like, what are you doing?
I don't know.
If you've watched the musical, she speaks like Caroline Bingley in that.
Caroline Bingley, except it's Mrs. Bennett.
Yeah, and this is just, it's like she's trying to do a posh accent, but she can't quite achieve it.
Yeah, and I'm like, is that supposed to just be because she's like an annoying character and it's
Is that a character choice? Or is that...
But it's not clear enough to me as to whether that is a choice or if it's just the fact that she doesn't do a very good accent.
Yeah.
And then Mr. Bingley says, when Jane's better, I'm going to hold a ball. But then he doesn't actually hold a ball, per se. He holds a garden.
Oh, yeah, also, by the way that we find out about, so from the scene change between Mr. Collins and the harp in the drawing room scene, they just hold up an invitation to the Netherfield ball for quite a long time. I'd say a little bit too long. And I was just like, I don't know a lot about Laurence Olivier, other than what you've just told me about the Othello thing as well, so he seems like an absolute piece of shit. But I kind of thought he was supposed to be one of the good actors of his time.
I mean, I think he's kind of known as a very handsome actor as well. He's kind of like,
and I'm just like, what pile of shite production does this scene change by just holding up an invitation?
I don't think Laurence Olivier directed it, did he?
Yeah, I know, but you'd think that if you were I mean, actually, I suppose this is bad logic. I was going to say, if you were a good actor, you kind of put your name to good things. But whenever there's too many famous people in a film...
Judi Dench was in Cats.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, that was a conscious choice by Judi Dench, because she...
No, I don't think she knew how bad it was going to be. No, I think
she knew it was going to be an absolute laugh, and she knows that she's famous enough that she can put it off.
Or, like, Idris Elba was in Cats, right? And he was like, I don't want to do... I can't remember what... Oh, I think it was the Avengers movie. He was like, I don't want to do Avengers.
Idris Elba is in Cats.
Yeah. But, like, so Idris Elba says, oh, I don't want to be in the Avengers movies because I want more serious roles. Like, I want to be taken seriously. And then he's like, you know what I'll do next? Cats.
But was it... because I know some actors, they talk about how it can get really boring. Like, if they're good actors and they really like the craft. So you get, like, your action heroes and they just do action hero stuff or whatever. Or, like, rom-com people and they just do rom-com people. But, like, actors who really enjoy their craft, they like doing loads of different things. So maybe they were just like, let's do Cats, let's do a musical that's just absolutely, like, as if you were off your head of drugs. I mean, I haven't even seen it.
Oh, my God, you just... I think you need to watch it, Bethany.
I think I'd like it, though.
Maybe, like, I watched it and I was like quite drunk at the time and I was ready to enjoy it. I mean, like, I did enjoy it in its you would enjoy it, actually, now that I'm saying it.
Yeah,
because it was absolutely batshit. Like, you imagine it and it's way more than you could ever
that's
imagine.
What I mean, because I think sometimes, like, you're being offered a substantial amount of money to basically just have a laugh, so you're like, why?
Well, it's like Spy Kids.
Yeah.
Like, I was reading about Spy Kids, and apparently it was, like, all... because it's, like, Antonio Banderas and, like, yeah. Salma Hayek. Was it Salma Hayek in it?
So.
Who's the mum? They're, like, well-known, very good. Alan Cumming's in it. Great actor. Sylvester Stallone's in it. All of these really great name actors. And apparently they basically did it for free because of the person that made it, I think, just had, like... great connections.
Yeah, or they and made... that's the thing. I quite like actors that don't take themselves too seriously. Like, they're like, this is fun. This is just a fun film that's going to be fun to make.
Well, it was really quick to make as well, but then Cats is like, Cats was a whole...
Yeah, they spent a lot of money on that to be laughably...
Yeah, like, Spy Kids basically had no budget, and they made a great movie anyway.
That's why if you throw a bunch of A-listers and a bunch of money at a film, it's going to be bad. Because you don't need any creativity.
Yeah.
So where if you have to get people on side for unknown actors, or you just don't have a bigger budget and you've got to get people on side, then you've got, like,
you've got
to
work
with
the Blair
Witch Project. Like, that was just, like, absolutely no budget, so they were able to make shit tons of money off it. Yeah. Anyway, we've got off topic. They're at the Netherfield Ball, but it's not a ball. It's a garden party.
It's a garden party. Caroline Bingley is like, Darcy, come and try this punch. I want to make sure it's blended properly. And then Mr. Darcy takes a sip of the punch and goes... and
I think you should have an ASMR.
Mr. Darcy, ASMR, just goes... punch.
She also, shortly after this, they shoot round to all of the activities that they're doing, and she's like, it's not as difficult as I thought it would be to entertain the rustics.
Yeah, the rustics.
I was like, oh, Jesus. And then we cut to Lizzie running away from Mr. Collins, and
Mr. Darcy sees her,
so he's kind of trying to see what she's up to, and, like, she's literally running.
She's like running around, and Mr. Collins is like, Miss Elizabeth, Miss Bennet, Miss Elizabeth, and then she's like hiding in a bush, and then Mr. Collins comes up to Mr. Darcy and is like, so have you seen Miss Elizabeth anywhere? And Darcy's like, no. And then Mr. Collins goes away and she's like, phew.
Yeah. I should also point out at this point, their bonnets are those ones that are really high up on their heads and flat. I don't like it.
Yeah, they look like they're made of cardboard. They just stick straight up.
Yeah. And then they're doing archery. I don't know why they're doing archery.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here. But Mr. Darcy's doing archery and Lizzie comes over. She's like, is that hard? And he's like, well, it's the sort of thing that even a woman could do.
Yeah, you also, like, this is so obviously a lead up to a hustle. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You know that Lizzie's going to be good at it because Darcy's over-explaining archery. And you're just like, yeah.
He's mansplaining. And it also, it's the opportunity for them to, like... I think that's a classic thing, archery as well, because it's like, I can lean over your shoulder, or, like, you're teaching someone how to shoot.
Yeah, I mean, we've all seen Princess Diaries, and you're too. Like, absolute stellar scene in archery.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, Mr. Darcy's, like, you know, guiding her, and they're very close together, and then he's like a bit shit, and then she shoots like four bullseyes in a row.
Yeah, so then Caroline Bingley interrupts. She comes in as like a massive cock blocker.
So then Darcy's like, oh well, I look like an idiot now, don't I? I'm never gonna try and teach women to do archery again, because clearly you've taught me something, Lizzie. Like, he's very like affable.
Yeah.
And like, he's way too willing to kind of have himself be a bit embarrassed, which is not Darcy's
like,
character.
Darcy
at all.
Is supposed to be socially awkward. Like, he's supposed to be proud, but even when he loses his proudness, he's still socially awkward.
Yeah, and he doesn't really know how to take, like, he doesn't like to be laughed at.
Yeah.
He's very
but
sensitive
like throughout the
that.
Film that he kind of gets more relaxed about that, but he still doesn't know how to interact with people well.
Yeah. And this Darcy is way too like eloquent and charismatic.
Yeah. And Caroline Bingley kind of comes in and she kind of tries to get her way in. And also, this is another thing where we thought it was particular to Pride and Prejudice, but Caroline does warn Lizzie about Wickham.
Yeah, and you said that you looked that up and it is in
the book.
According
to Spark Notes. I don't remember it when I was listening.
I don't remember it, and I just listened to the audiobook.
But
then again,
apparently Spark Notes teaching our children, not my children, obviously,
yeah,
their children, the future.
Children of the future.
Says it's true, so I believe Spark Notes over our own memories.
apparently
it does happen. So I bet if there's any hardcore Austin fans who listen to this, they must be like these absolute amateurs, mate.
I know. But that's why you love it. That's why you love it. They say the title. Mr. Darcy's like, oh, I've been ever so proud. And then Lizzie's like, and I've been ever so prejudiced. And it's like, oh, they said the thing.
Oh, yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
You think they're going to be friends. Then Mary's embarrassing and Mr. Darcy's actually like, I don't know what I've just seen, but I think it's time for me to leave.
Yeah. Yeah, very much.
And he walks off.
And then Caroline Bingley comes in and just absolutely wrecks Lizzie's family. She's just like, oh, your mother's embarrassing, your sister's drunk, and your other sister can't sing for sheer. And then Lizzie cries, which is so un-Lizzie-ish.
Oh, yeah, that's when they make friends, actually.
Yeah.
You're right.
So then, the plot is all over the place. I don't think it particularly matters. But so, like, she's crying, and that made me angry. I was like, Lizzie wouldn't cry.
Yeah, it's very, like... Not
she
Lizzie.
Might get a bit like embarrassed, but she wouldn't cry. And then like Darcy comes over and is like, oh, it's okay, I didn't think you like, and then yeah, they're like, I didn't think you were as prejudiced, whatever they say. They just say the title. But also, just after that happens, Darcy then overhears Mrs. Bennet bragging about how rich Bingley is and about how Jane is gonna marry him, and it's orcs.
He sort of goes off and Lizzie's like, oh, I can't remember who she says it to, but Lizzie's like, oh, well, I've learned that Mr. Darcy is the sort of person to give his friendship and then take it away as soon as it's tested or something along those lines.
She's basically like, so because he heard her mum say that, and then he also, it shoots to like Lydia being so drunk she can't stand up.
Yeah, they're absolutely pissed at this
and
point.
And he's literally like, yikes, I'm out. It's embarrassing for you. Then we cut and Lizzie's just watering flowers and the other Bennet sisters are playing with puppies in the garden.
Random puppies. Jane's just holding a puppy.
I think, and then in the background there's some kennels and it's never fully explained why there's a puppy litter there.
Maybe they had some puppies around and they were like, we'll work this in. Everyone loves a puppy.
I mean, they're not wrong. It was a cute scene.
They're not wrong.
And then obviously this is the lead up to the Mr. Collins proposal.
Mrs. Bennet keeps on winking. I can't remember. I think she's winking at Kitty, and Kitty's like, why are you winking at me? And she's like, I'm not winking.
And this is when you really
and that's actually
hear
in the book.
Kitty and Lizzie.
Kitty!
So she's probably maybe got a bit of a northern accent, and she's trying to trying to do like posh reading.
I don't know if it's even that.
Clotaire? Lizzie?
Yeah, there's Mr. Collins.
And obviously he proposes. It's horrible. She says no, obviously. And he's on his knees at one point. Mm-hmm. Begging, and he's crawling. And it's
It's
just horrible. Yeah. At one point, he says, look, you're poor. You're probably not going to get a better offer than this.
I mean, that he says that in every version.
I know, but I'm just like, oh, God.
And then he says to Mrs. Bennet, like, oh, yeah, I'm pretty confident that her refusal is just, like, you know, she's just saying it to be funny. And Mrs. Bennet's like, oh, no, she's just she's a headstrong
foolish
girl.
Headstrong.
And she's, yeah, and he's like, oh, well, now that you've said that, maybe I don't want to marry her. And Mrs. Bennet's like, oh, shit.
Yeah, because Miss Bennet opens Jane's mail and they find that the Bingleys have left, which is also a weird thing that Mrs. Bennet has done. She just opened her mail and she's just like, they have no sensitivity about how crushing this is for Jane. They're just like, this is horrific. And they find out, and then Wickham turns up with his tiny moustache. I don't know why he's there.
He's come to tell her the full thing about Darcy and, like, denying him his fortune. Yes, because though his coat is red, he still prays for his daily bread.
I'm never going to forget that, ever.
Never gonna forget it.
And then Lizzie tells Jane off for crying over Caroline's letter, even though Lizzie literally cried over Caroline when she was mean.
Yeah, she's like, don't you dare cry over Caroline Bingley. And it's like, okay, Lizzie.
And then Charlotte and the Lucases turn up and we get Charlotte's gingham ensemble.
It's so great. I think it's the best one.
As soon as I clocked it, I was like, this is fucking great.
Yes,
it's probably the best outfit of the film.
Yeah, I would argue that.
One thing we should point out is obviously Charlotte's supposed to be quite plain, and they've used.
She's definitely not.
Yeah, she's not plain. Neither is Mary. Is it Mary? Yeah.
Yeah, although Mary's like been made to look a bit more plain because she's got like.
But all they've done is put glasses on her.
Yeah.
That's all they've done.
No, but like I think she. I would say she's like a bit more plain than like.
Yeah,
Charlotte.
I feel like she's.
I would say Charlotte's on a par with.
Yeah, it's Lizzie true. I think they kind of all of the young actresses are pretty good looking.
Yeah.
And then Lizzie visits Charlotte at Rosings.
Yeah, there's a random man. There's like a bunch of men just carrying trunks in, and there's just it's just really funny because there's this one guy that's like carrying what is supposed to be a really heavy trunk on his shoulder, and he's trying to pretend that it's really heavy, but it's clearly completely empty, and you're just watching him be like and it's actually like you can see it coming off his shoulder.
Yeah. And then Miss Catherine de Bourgh arrives pretty much instantly, and you meet Anne,
Lady Catherine.
Darcy and Fitzwilliam. Anne is not sickly in this. She's just a bit weird.
I don't even remember what Anne
you
looks
do,
like.
You do, remember she does that kind of weird face when...
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about. You know what I mean.
I do. It's like, I don't...
So, like, Lady Catherine says something about how they're promised, Anne and Darcy are promised together at birth, and it just shoots to Anne.
Oh, no, it's Lady Catherine says that Anne's the sole heir to their estate.
Oh, yes, that's what it is.
And Anne's like,
And she's just like,
yes, I am.
Little smug face on her, because she's a rich
one. Colonel Fitzwilliam's in a kilt.
Yeah, he is in a kilt.
That's fun.
Also, they do this really formal pairing up to go into dinner. And this does happen in the book as well, I think, because I specifically remember, or maybe they do it about the chairs or something. But Charlotte doesn't have anyone to be paired up to go into the dinner with.
Oh, yeah.
So, because Darcy then goes to walk Lizzie in, and Lady Catherine puts a stop to that. And she's absolutely fuming about their flirting. At one point, her teacup is rattling with the rage she's got about it.
She also does this weird cough. It's like,
yeah, that is weird. I actually just wrote Lady Catherine is fuming in that way. You know what I mean? That way. Yeah, that way.
Yeah.
Doesn't translate over podcast, does it? But yeah, she's fuming.
No.
Also, off screen, they put in so many stupid fucking scenes in this, and then all the important ones seem to happen off screen. So Fitzwilliam tells Lizzie about what Darcy did with breaking up Jane and Bingley off screen.
Yeah.
So then we just see Lizzie, I think she tells Charlotte about it.
Yeah, she's like, well, Colonel Fitzwilliam told me X. And then they find out, they get a letter from Jane, or she gets a letter from Jane.
No, she doesn't get the letter, remember?
Oh, no.
She doesn't.
Wrong.
That is canon. She should get a letter, but she doesn't. So what happens is she tells Charlotte, then Darcy walks in and he proposes. At this point, I've written, oh, no, that's later on. I was about to mention the tartan sash, but that's later on. Also, at this point, I didn't realise fake eyelashes were such a thing.
I didn't notice any fake eyelashes.
Really?
I believe you. I do. I just wasn't looking at the fake eyelashes.
So, yeah, Darcy proposes, and it's pretty classic. It's not much to write.
He calls her my darling, which is like, never would that happen.
Yes, because he's not a good Darcy. Oh, sometimes.
He's so forward, and he sort of goes up to her really close and is like, yes, my darling, and she's like, what are you doing?
Every time I think about how I fuck with the plot and the characters, more rage comes inside of me. Because what was the point of doing the adaptation?
Literally.
Oh, I'm actually a bit angry about it. I need to calm down.
Enraged.
So then he proposes, she also tells him off in such a shit way. It's like she's still trying to be super attractive while she's being mean to him. And I'm just like, that's what I hate, okay? You know when people, like, actually, this is so judgy, but I'm going to continue, and if it's bad, we'll just cut it. You know when people, like...
Hot takes from Bethany.
I can feel myself getting cancelled as I continue. So it's specifically like, I get so disappointed in women who prioritise making sure they're being deemed attractive by men over personality or anything else. Okay? So you know when they won't be funny, or when the man is just being an absolute dick, and you know that they have the capacity to call people out, okay? I'm not, like, saying when people don't have that kind of confidence. When you know they've got the capacity to call people out, but they're just like, oh, I would still shag him, even though he's a twat. And I'm like, no!
Yeah, agree.
And that's kind of what I feel like the vibes I was getting off with this proposal. Because instead of absolutely handing him his arse, she just is like, she's careful to make sure that the door's open.
Well, no, she says you're the last man in the world I could be.
But she doesn't say it with any passion.
Well, yeah. You're just, yeah. I think that's arguable.
There's more important things in life. Sometimes men need to be told. So often they need to be told.
And that ends Hot Takes with Bethany.
So then Lizzie returns from Rosings after she's rejected Darcy's proposal. And she just returns to find out about Lydia and Wickham.
Yeah, she doesn't get a letter. She's just like, do-do-do-do-do, and she gets home and everyone's like...
Also, we've had no lead-up to Lydia going to Brighton with the aunt and uncle.
No, there's nothing. There's nothing there. It's just fully like...
Okay, we just come back.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if they've run away from... where do they live? I can't remember the name of their house.
Meryton.
Not Meryton, the name of their particular house, but...
Longbourn.
Longbourn, yes, that's it. It's almost as if Wickham's whisked her away from there.
Yeah, and then, I mean, because he has been to the house quite a lot, just randomly, without invitation.
Yeah.
But also, she hasn't gone to Pemberley at this point either. And Lydia's just eloped.
She doesn't go away with her aunt and uncle, the gardeners. Lydia just...
Well, if she had gone to Pemberley, then she would have actually... They would have actually had to have a set and stuff, which clearly they couldn't be bothered to do.
Yeah.
So they were just, like, people going to each other's houses, but not Pemberley.
Not that house. We never actually saw Pemberley.
Except for what?
Do they even really mention Pemberley? Because in the book and most adaptations, Pemberley is a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember them saying something about how he's the nephew of a Viscount or a Viscount. No, yeah, the son of a Viscount.
But it's almost as if they're like trying to brush over Pemberley.
They don't talk about Pemberley at all, I don't think.
Which is absolutely nuts for a Pride and Prejudice adaptation to not mention Pemberley.
Madness.
Oh, I'm getting angry again. Right. Also, Lizzie is wearing a tartan sash during this scene.
She does a weird little run as well.
Yeah, she does a weird little run. She's wearing a tartan sash. She's found out about Wickham and Lydia, and Darcy has arrived, I think, to set her straight about Wickham at this point. But this is why it's annoying, because the proposal happens in canon, I love saying canon because it makes it seem so like modern. In canon, the proposal happens, then Lizzie goes off away with her aunt and uncle. She gets to know Darcy a bit more and she likes him, and then she finds out through a letter, I believe, after the proposal about Wickham. And then she, when she's about to go off with her aunt and uncle, they mention Brighton, and she knows Wickham's in Brighton, so she tries to stop Lydia going.
Well, I think, no, Lydia's already gone at that point.
Yeah, but she knows about Wickham before Lydia goes to Brighton.
You're right.
Yeah, because she's kind of trying to warn people, but without...
But she doesn't want to expose Georgiana.
Yeah, so she knows all about that, but in this she finds out after the event, and I'm just like,
yeah. Whoa. And then she's like, oh, like the whole point is she's like, oh my god, I am to blame because I should have known this about Mr. Wickham, but like she doesn't know it, so the whole point is moot.
Yeah, so they've just fucked it again plot wise.
Mrs. Bennett's lying on the sofa being like, ah, and they're like, do you want some chicken broth? And she's like, oh, no, I couldn't possibly... Wait, did you say chicken broth? And it's like a... Ooh. It's just like her ears perked up at chicken broth. And then Lydia returns of her own accord. Like, no one really...
Wait, before that...
Oh, Darcy comes in. Yeah.
No, we've had Darcy come in. We've had... Well, Jane briefly talks about how she dreams of Bingley, which is really weird. Jane would never say that.
Yeah.
And then they talk about how they're going to have to run away to Margate because of the shame. Margate. And they're packing up to go to Margate. And they just call it Margate.
Margate.
I mean, it's. I hear myself and I don't sound like they sound because they're doing it in a posh accent.
You have to get to Margate.
Margate. It really annoyed me. I've just written Margate in capital letters. I've actually got my head in my hands right now.
I know, I can hear. This whole, it's exhausting to talk about.
Yeah, there's a pit of rage.
But yes, as they're packing to go, they hear trumpets and they hear horses, and down the drive comes a whole kind of
parade
of carriages and like footmen with horses in uniform, and it's like Lydia's returned, like Mr. Darcy's gone by this point, it's been a few days, and Lydia's returned of her own accord, we think. And like no one's gone and been like, I found Lydia, we're gonna bring her back. She just turns up. And she's like, oh yes, we've suddenly come into a lot of money. Isn't that convenient? And then that's why they've called the footmen and stuff, because they just bought it.
Yeah. And also she calls Wickham Wiki.
Wiki?
Wiki? Little Wiki?
Wiki.
Which honestly is the shit nickname he deserves. But yeah, Wickham tries to palm it off, saying a rich uncle who lived in Jamaica died.
He's like, yeah, it's my uncle who lived in Jamaica.
Yeah, he's just like, ooh. And then she shows off the ring, and Lydia wants to show the servants her ring, which actually I think is quite a nice.
Yeah, maybe, or maybe also not, because she's just being like, look at my ring, and they're like, why would I give a shit about this?
Yeah, but it's almost like she wants the servant's approval.
Maybe
she's doing it because she thinks she's showing off, but secretly.
I think you're being a bit too generous to Lydia.
To be fair, I'm being generous to the writers.
Yeah.
Then Lady C arrives.
Lady Catherine comes.
The servant comes in and looks like he's absolutely shat his pants. He's like, yeah. She's here.
She's here.
There's a parrot at this point as well. This is the parrot point.
Oh my god, yes, my favourite bit. So they come in, and like because they're in the middle of packing for Margate, like everything's a complete mess. Lady Catherine sits on a music box that had been on a chair, and you just hear it going, and then she like stands up and someone like picks it up from underneath her. And then she's like, I want to talk to Lizzie, and Lizzie comes. And she's like carrying a parrot, and the parrot's like, my poor nerves. And Lizzie's like, he's very young. Like, as an excuse for the parrot, he's very young. Please, he's only five. He doesn't know better. He's a toddler parrot.
Yeah, so then Lady C talks to Lizzie on her own. And then this is when the bollocks really starts taking the piss, okay?
The bollocks starts taking the piss. Is that what it is?
Yeah, the absolute bollocks that they've written, okay? Because Lady C makes out that she's trustee of Darcy's estate, which means that she controls his fortune, which in no world makes sense because Darcy's parents are dead. He's the man. Why would he have a trustee of his estate? He's inherited.
Yeah.
But anyway, so she's like, oh, I get to decide who Darcy marries, because if he marries someone I don't like, aka you, I'll make him poor. And then Lizzie's like, do I give a shit?
Yeah, she calls Wickham a flibbity gibbet. That's fun.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, after everything that, like, Darcy's done for Wickham, and then that's how she finds out about the fact that Darcy saved the day.
Lady C is the one who tells her that Darcy paid Wickham off. Also, what I did enjoy about that is, so she leaves, and she goes, I send no compliments to your mother.
Yeah. That's what she says in the book.
I just really enjoy it. I was like, it's such a petty little thing to say, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great.
Okay. And then, absolute plot twist.
Oh my
Darcy's
god.
Darcy's in the carriage. They were in it! It was all set up!
That was so enraging.
Yeah, so Darcy's been waiting in the carriage this whole time.
He's literally standing outside, like no one would have seen him out the window or anything. And she's like, she's like, yeah, you're good to go, mate. And he's like, oh, really? What did she say? And she's like, well, she didn't say that she wouldn't marry you.
Yeah, and she didn't care about your fortune. And then she literally at one point she's complimenting Lizzie.
Yeah, she's like, oh no, I quite like her, and I think she's all right for you. I've checked her out. Like, it's as if like this is all a plot between them. And then,
yeah, as if they were in cahoots on the whole thing. Even though her daughter's now got nobody to marry.
Yeah, like, why? What in what way would she be induced? What would be the point?
Yeah, she's got absolutely no reason to want this to happen. They've made her a benevolent...
They've just totally changed her character, because she's extremely rude from day one.
They did it also at the last minute, because in the beginning, she's your classic Lady
I just don't know why they've... What is... There was already a story. Jane Austen wrote a story already. You don't have to, like, change it.
It was... Also, there's zero chemistry between Darcy and Lizzie.
Yeah.
Just non-existent. Darcy goes in after, you know, getting a little pep talk from Lady C, being like, you got it, mate. Go on. Go get the girl.
Go get her. Bullshit. Go to her.
And he goes in and they go into the garden, and then this is where they do about 20 minutes of plot in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, out there is, because he's like, I've got a message from Mr. Bingley for Jane. So where is she? And then they say, oh, she's out in the garden. And Lizzie's like, shall I just go with him? And he's like, yeah, shall we just go? And it's really awkward. And then they go out, and then he's like, well, I think Mr. Bingley's already here. And they look over, and Mr. Bingley's like gone to sit down with Jane in the garden.
And it's heavily implied he's proposing.
Yeah. And then Mr. Darcy, like, they go and sit on a bench. And then he's like, well, I heard what you said to Lady Catherine. Dare I propose again?
You sound so defeated.
I'm so tired. Yeah, so he's like, dare I propose again? And she's like, yeah. Well, she doesn't really even, she sort of just looks at him, and then they kiss, and it's not, you don't even really get a proposal, it's just like, oh yeah, well.
Also, they explicitly say, Darcy's like, because Lizzie's like, oh, I was actually quite rude to Lady Catherine, I wouldn't have been if I'd known, and he's like, oh no, she quite likes it.
She likes you being rude to her, she's so used to everyone being nice to her that she, which is actually something that Darcy says in the book, I think, or like Elizabeth says to Darcy after they're engaged. She's like, well, you must just be so bored of everyone always trying to impress you that's why you liked me, because I just didn't give a shit.
Yeah. Also, at the very end, we get this really weird thing where like Mrs. Bennet and Mr. Bennet kind of realise about the proposal with Darcy and the proposal with Bingley. We shoot to Mr. and Mrs. Bennet, and they walk in, and Mr. Collins is playing the piano with Mary, and she can sing suddenly.
Suddenly she can sing. And she hits that high note, and everyone's so proud of her.
Then Miss Mrs. Bennet says this really weird thing where she's like three daughters marry, basically, and two well on their way because she's decided she's going to set them up with, I think one of them's being set up with Fitzwilliam.
Yeah, I don't even know. I was like, what is even happening at this point? So much is going on. They're trying to fill so many plot holes.
So yeah, the end.
The end. Like, at this point, we're just like, I don't even know what I've just seen.
Yeah, it was bad. I think it's the worst. I think it's worse than Mansfield Park.
I mean, at least Mansfield Park... I mean, I haven't read Mansfield Park, so I don't know if they've stuck to
it seemed pretty faithful to the plot.
It did.
And, you know, they didn't just throw in a random word there.
They didn't unnecessarily... I mean, there was the whole, like, thing about him owning slaves in Antigua, but I don't
think... Yeah, but they didn't use slurs.
No, they did not.
And also, it is true, in Mansfield Park, he does own slaves, so they were kind of keeping...
Yeah, they didn't erase the historical... The
horribleness.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just thought it was an absolute shite.
Why is Lady Catherine de Bourgh like that? Don't you know it's because she's a Virgo? Why is Mr. Darcy a twat, my friend? Can't you see it's because he's a Capricorn? Astrology
corner. I was thinking about this and I was like, oh God, I don't... The only thing I was like, which I think I've already said, is that, like, Bingley and Jane are both Libras. I think in this, also in this adaptation, I think Lizzie is more on the Scorpio side rather than the Aquarius side.
Yeah, she's not weird in the slightest. She's barely got any personality at all.
Yeah, but she's, like, she's quite intense and sometimes a little bit, like, well, she's into the intrigue of it all, isn't she?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, they're just all such weird, flat characters. I also just wanted to talk about Darcy's hair because it's, like, he's got this little curl that is, like, gelled onto his head.
Yeah, he does. That's like, why when you hairs, were, like, he's quite well known for being an attractive actor, I was like,
Well, if you Google Laurence Olivier, he's like a classic Hollywood kind of hunk.
Yeah, also, what's attractive changes.
Yeah.
Nope, not a fan. Not a fan even then.
No. Like, well, you weren't in the 90s.
But yeah, if we were going to go old school and talk about the attractiveness of the leading man, no. I can't even remember what Bingley looks like.
I'm looking at Laurence Olivier now. Well, no, not now. In 72. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm not into it.
Yeah, and I mean, I just think they tried to do something, and they tried to make it palatable for perhaps an audience. They didn't want to have Lizzie too spiky. I don't really know what they were trying to do.
Do you know what, though? Looking at photos of him, he does have a bit of a look of Colin Firth.
I see that, but he's got the ones... No, okay, I don't see it. No,
well, the more you, if you scroll through, some of them he looks more like Colin Firth than others.
Yeah, I saw one where he's got a weird moustache and I was like, yeah, maybe in that one.
Yeah, like, it depends on the photo. But yeah, he's got the same kind of, like, facial shape and the, like, dimply chin and just, like, yeah, he does, he's got kind of slight Colin Firth vibes about him.
And that's not to say that the people, what was attractive back then. Because what's that guy's name? Is it James Dean?
Yeah.
Is he in the same era?
He's like 60s, I think.
Okay, no, it's not him I'm thinking who's super attractive as well, although he is better looking.
Marlon Brando?
Yes, Marlon Brando.
Marlon Brando was fit, and also he was woke AF.
Yeah, Marlon Brando is an absolute sexy beast.
Yeah, he is.
Anyway, agreed. We've got off topic. That's how shit it was.
We just want to think about Marlon Brando.
That is really hard for Anna to do any star signs because, honestly, the acting...
I tried. I thought about it beforehand and everything, which I usually don't do.
But if we were going to rate it, for me, I think we gave Mansfield Park a 3. And I think this is a 3 as well.
It's, yeah.
It's not faithful to the plot whatsoever.
No, I mean, I kind of want to give it a 2. It was that bad.
I wanted to give it a 2, but then I was a bit like, nah, give it a 2, mate. I was trying to work out what redeems it, and I was like, I mean, I think of 2 as, like, genuinely difficult to watch, but this
I mean, the difference between... The thing that made this not as terrible, or, like, that made this maybe on a par. Like, it was more terrible in some ways than Mansfield Park, but the good thing about it was only 2 hours long. I didn't have to watch six episodes of it, which was the thing about Mansfield Park. But I at least with Mansfield Park, it was like, it was kind of, you kind of got into it after a while. There was like a, there was an element of, and maybe it's just because we know Pride and Prejudice, like the story of Pride and Prejudice so well, but this one, the plot wasn't even cohesive. None of it made any sense.
Yeah, there were so many little things they added in, like the race with the Lucases in the carriages.
Nothing, and then, it was so unnecessary.
Just cut out really important scenes.
Yeah.
Like, you don't hear about Pemberley.
No, I think, I want to give this a 2, because if I give Mansfield Park a 3, I think this is worse.
I think it is worse. It's racist, it's also just shit in general. Like, even if it wasn't racist, it would still be fucking awful.
So,
it's a 2. They should all be ashamed of themselves. Yeah, we're actually booing it.
Boo!
I can't do it.
Boo!
That's all from us for now. We'll be back next week with a special episode discussing all of our hot takes on all things Austin. Please review us 5 stars if your app allows, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. If you want to get in touch with any of your hot takes, please email us at austintranslationpod@gmail.com or austin_translation_pod on Instagram. We might read them out. We bid you adieu.
We've done it so you don't have to.
Honestly, we're such givers to this world.
We give and we give and we give. And when is it going to be time for us to take? When is it going to be time for us to receive?
The end. Goodbye.